Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. It's my pleasure this morning to introduce Chogo Zen Jeff Skolnick. Jeff has been a Zen practitioner since 1980, sound about right? And he's a former brain researcher, is a physician, has his doctorate in natural health sciences, is a clinical assistant professor at UW Psychiatry, and works in the field every day. He's the author of 3 books, and he's a member here, has been for many years, as well as at Seattle Soto Zen and Choboji over in Seattle. He gets around, just can't, he can't get enough of this practice. Is the deal. Some of you may not know Jeff that well. He is a regular on Wednesday. He splits his time between Seattle and Vashon, that's correct, isn't it? Regular on Wednesday night. He's the shoji there right now. And yeah, I don't know what else to say. Thanks so much for coming. Can't wait to hear all about your life.
Everybody, good to see you. So I realize I don't have my notes, which is brilliant. That's fine.
You don't have notes?
No.
What are those things?
These are handouts.
okay.
So thank you for inviting me to do this.
Yeah.
I've been actually fretting about this for a little bit because a few months ago, in the discussion on Wednesday, I had made a comment that that sounds like something that we're doing at work. I work at a psychiatric hospital, and we're implementing this program based on this new approach, new to them, that I call the Satori West method. Satori means awakening, and West is sort of a Western brain kind of a approach to it. And I said, well, this approach has 5 different points, and there is some, and each point has a video. And so each video is the kind of the distillation, each point is a distillation of probably what is maybe hours of presentation and discussion. And Coach was like, well, why don't you present that here today? And
it's in 20 minutes.
In 20 minutes, exactly. So, I thought at first, well, yeah, sure, I'll show the videos. That'll be great because the videos have graphics and there's, you know, they kind of help explain the points. So I'm going to try to go through them here today. So I apologize. Each point is a little dense, and so there's a lot of information that I'll be imparting to you. So your head will be swimming. So because of that, I brought some handouts that you can have afterwards. I only have 20 of them, and my notes are not in here anywhere.
Yeah, so give me those. I'll look through them, just in case your notes are there.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, it's, at this point, we're good.
Okay.
So the first point, the first video, talks about kind of a non-starter, that you kind of have to embrace this aspect, that for human beings, life accumulates a lot of hurt. And so, for instance, you think about, well, we had to be born from a warm womb and into this cold world, and then no parents are perfect. And a lot of people have some scars from childhood and difficulties and conflicts with siblings and that kind of thing. And then you enter right into adolescence where your insecurities come out and you try to fit in, and either you nobody does usually, or you fit in, but you feel really insecure about it. And then you go right into teenage years where you're struggling to push away the parents that you love and find a whole new you, which is a lot of anxiety. And then you go into adulthood. And there are surveys that show that, at least in developed countries, the degree of stress that people are under is extreme. But we push it down. We just kind of stuff it down. And then throughout life, there are losses. You know, you lose your loved ones, grandparents, childhood homes, pets, that kind of thing. And then you hit midlife. And that's when you start losing all of your abilities and looks that you thought were going to be there forever when you were younger. And then there's, you know, we all get sick. We all have to face that. And then we face, ultimately, our own mortality. And so we build up a lot of hurt, a lot of struggles. But we're phenomenally good at distracting ourselves from that. But this practice requires that we get in touch with that. And I would say mental health requires that we get in touch with that. So now that I've said that, the second video says, well, the reason why we struggle and suffer actually is not because of the things that happens to us. It actually has more to do with how our brain is configured, how our brain is wired. Just like all animals, it's wired for survival. So when an animal, so going from amphibians all the way up to us, whenever we see something that we want for survival, we focus our attention on it. So I'm going to go into a little bit of the basic science behind this, and hopefully it'll all make sense to you. So if you're hungry and you see some chocolate cake and you're really hungry, or you see some food, whatever that smells and looks good, your attention focuses on it and the feelings and the thoughts about it. Similarly, if there's something you don't want, like if you see, you know, if you're afraid of needles, I think I mentioned this before, and as if you and you know, if someone's going to give you a vaccination, you're going to be paying attention to that vaccination, the thoughts of like, oh my God, what's going to happen, and all the feelings around it. So what happens is that the stronger the drive, the more emotions that you have, the more your attention locks into what the object is. And the more it locks in, the more it pretty much wipes everything else out of awareness, except for what you're focusing on. So, you know, animals do that all the time. That's how they survive. They go from what they need and what they're afraid of to, and then when they don't, they kind of chill out. Humans, on the other hand, are an exception to that for three basic reasons. The first is that we are very smart, and so we're always thinking, we're always planning. You know, I was in a subway in New York and in Tokyo earlier, and everybody's on their cell phone constantly, or reading, or doing something. So because of that, our attention locks into what we're doing, or we're thinking about what we don't want to have happen. And so that kind of steals our attention. And the second thing is that we have imaginations that are phenomenal. So we can imagine the ideal thing that we want, the perfect life, the perfect way this lecture is going to go, the ideal looks and skin, way to be in life. We also can imagine the worst case scenario, which we also imagine that even our own death kind of freaks us out. And so we're constantly kept grasping and wanting towards this sort of an ideal of what we can imagine. And the third thing is that we have a sense of self. And the sense of self wants to feel, it's the sense of who I am right now, this me right here, that feels like it is going through time and space. That sense of self wants to feel special. We want to be approved of. We want people to like us. I want you to understand what I'm saying. And we also want to avoid feeling embarrassed or ashamed or humiliated or feeling like we don't count, like we're not meaningful. And so that occupies our attention. And so our attention is grabbed 24/7, even in your dreams. Does that make sense, everybody? So because of that, what happens is that it puts you in a state that I call tunnel vision. And tunnel vision is where you're locked into your life, into your mind, and everything else is pretty much on the periphery. So, you know, the world around you gets relatively blocked out as you're focused on you and your life and what you want and what you need and that kind of thing. So that's tunnel vision. What tunnel vision does, and this is, and I'm throwing a lot of information at you, but what tunnel vision does is it warps your reality. Now, even if you're focused on chocolate cake and everything gets blocked out, it will warp your reality in fairly predictable ways. So here's four instances of how it does that. So first is that it accentuates the sense of you, the sense of self. And when that happens, you can feel super self-conscious. You can also feel like everything is about you. You kind of over-personalize things when you really shouldn't, you know, when it doesn't really make sense. You can feel the sense of alienation, like you're really alone. It's kind of that weird kind of feeling of being on the either on the center of the world or like you're on the outside of life looking in kind of feeling. So it accentuates that sense of self. It also causes the sense of limited options. So it's either like your mind gets, like everything has to be a certain way. It's either all or nothing. It's black and white. It's my way or not my way. Either should, it must be that way. So it gives us a sense of limited options. It also gives us, it distorts the way you think. So you tend to jump to conclusions really easily. You tend to feel like you are certain you know what the future holds. You just get more irrational for a variety of reasons. And the last thing it does is that, of the four things, there are others, is that it kind of binds you to your attention. So if you focus your attention on something, you're going to be driven to go get it. So it makes you a creature of habit. It locks in your personality so that people, after a while, you start to get kind of stale. And you're kind of a victim of just being really habitual. And that's one of the things that people suffer with, is that life just feels really predictable, because it also causes you to want to see each moment as similar to a past moment. So it causes a lot of habitual ways of perceiving and of ways of acting. So those are fairly predictable, right? So if I were to see chocolate cake that I wanted and I'm boom, 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 zeroed in on it, I'm going to start feeling like I have to have that, you know? So there's, and you get irrational about it and you start future tripping what it's going to taste like and the whole thing. So that's what tunnel vision is. And tunnel vision, it's when it's triggered by something in your life, that is like someone dies or something, then you can get so fixated and your reality can get so warped and so distorted that you wind up having tunnel vision like this. And often when that's the definition of a crisis. And when your tunnel vision gets so narrow, I mean, people think about suicide. People engage in homicide when they would never normally do that. Because they are in tunnel vision reality, and it is extremely warped, and they are not who they would normally be. So that, on the one end of the spectrum, that crisis, that misery, that suffering, that is the reason why we all suffer, because we're all living in tunnel vision. All of us, me included. So what is on the other end of the spectrum? Like you're like waiting to get there. It's enough of the suffering. So I'm not even watching the clock. Do you have a clock?
Yeah. You got a minute and a half left. I'm just kidding.
No, how much time do I need to...
Here, you got 10, 15 minutes.
Here, you want... Oh, that'd be great. Thank you. So like 10 minutes? So on the other end of the spectrum, there's something very unique about the human brain. And I feel like you could travel throughout the universe, throughout multiple galaxies, and even if we discovered life, we'd never see anything as miraculous as the human brain. One of the basic things that the human brain has is that it's really, you don't have one brain sitting in here. You actually have two of them. So it's not one cut in half. So for instance, there have been people who were born without one of their cerebral hemispheres who they didn't know until autopsy that they actually were only had half a brain. You can anesthetize, you know, part of the brain. Each hemisphere has its own awareness. Each hemisphere has its own preferences. It has its own way of seeing reality, has ways of seeing life. So in humans, we have the capability of each hemisphere getting to know each other. That's been called, that kind of awareness of awareness. It's been called self-awareness, although it's a little bit misleading because there's really no self. It's just a process. It's just a process of awareness knowing itself. And one way you can think of that is that it's a heightened sense of aliveness that other animals don't seem to have. That you can, when the two parts are trained on each other, and when they are, there's sort of a, you kind of wake up to now, the sense of presence. It's now become sort of pregnant with that, of that sense of, for instance, you get the sense of what it means that you're here right now, that you're in this room, that you were first, you know, you get the sense that what it took for you to be born. I mean, if you really want to drill into it, it's one of the videos kind of goes into all the graphics about it. But you really get the sense of how magnificent this second is and how precious it is and that it's never going to happen again. But it kind of brings you alive. And the other thing that what that does is it has you almost bursting with gratitude for the fact that you're here right now. And you literally can fall in love. Like you fall in love with a person, you can literally fall in love with your own experience because of that. The other thing it does is that it widens your awareness so that you're not locked into, it's the opposite of tunnel vision, because you're not locked into any one thing. There's a widened and detached awareness. So as the awareness gets widened and detached, part of your awareness locks into the sense of presence, sense of now. Does that make kind of even remote sense to you? So what happens with that widened sense of awareness is that everything you experience is experienced in context. So nothing is ever carved out of reality. It's all, when you see someone, it's like seeing a toddler and they hit you in the face. It's like, you realize, well, it's a toddler. So, you know, it's like you get that context. So I call that process brain shifting. It's when your brain shifts so that it's very much, the energy is internal, is very alive, and that internal aliveness comes from a place of emptiness. There's no senses and nobody. It's just a sense of aliveness. It's not even I'm alive. It's aliveness. And everything else, including the sense of you, gets widened out into this broader awareness. I know it gets a little bit complicated, but I'm sure you're all following me pretty well. So I call that process brain shifting. And brain shifting leads to wisdom. It's the basis of maturity. There is even a sense of spontaneity, of flow, because each moment is unique, whereas tunnel vision wants to force each moment to be like the next or a previous moment. Each moment becomes like stunningly unique, and so that's a lot of what awakening is. So on the one side, there's misery and crisis, and the other side, there's this brain shifted sense of aliveness and maturity and wisdom and context and that kind of thing. So that's the spectrum. So I call this end of it perspective. Perspective, you know, you can look at that just even a part of that spectrum and understand like just normal everyday stress and then like regular perspective. For like an example is like if, you know, sometimes when I'm driving and I want to get somewhere, I'm kind of like focused on where I want to go and everything else. And then if I'm late and I see traffic, it's like, oh, damn. And I'm really focused in the traffic. And then people who come in front of me are like, oh my God, I hate them. They don't deserve to be on the road. And can't you get off the road? And I start fantasizing about, you know, what they'll think of me if I'm late, and everyone thinks I'm always late for things, and, you know, and it's all about me, and I catastrophize as part of the warped thinking of tunnel vision. And then if I stop for a minute and think, wait, I get some insight, and I widen my awareness, I realize where everyone is stuck in traffic together. It's not just me, so there's a sense of empathy and love that kind of comes up from that. And it's like, well, what's the worst that can happen? Is it really worth stressing about this second that I'm alive? So that's just normal perspective that you can get. And if you get good at that, going from tunnel vision to at least a little perspective, it helps you get all the way, because you understand how the process works of widening awareness and getting the moment. So that's the third video. The fourth video really is, how do you go from tunnel vision to very wide perspective? There are four different ways. Number one, sorry, there's a lot of density of information here. Number one is, you just have to know you're in tunnel vision. That's huge. That is probably singularly the most important thing, is that to know now, or to know at any time, that you're in tunnel vision. The second way is to obviously practice what I call brain shifting, shikantaza, zen, however you do it, is to practice that kind of awareness widening, kind of getting in touch with that empty aliveness that's just sitting there waiting for you to realize it. The third way has to do with wellness. So, you know, we're going to start a program that has like a 5-year curriculum, and the brain shifting part really should be 2 years of curriculum. And I've tried to present it in just like 6 weeks or even in a weekend. It's, you know, it's really difficult, really concentrated. But when you're, so there are 6 spheres of wellness that I identified, and I brought a little graphic for you, as you can see. Boop, 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 and it's on the handout, so you don't have to sit there and memorize it. So these circles usually they normally overlap with each other. So the spheres of wellness all relate to each other really super quick. So like, if you think you want to be physically healthy, you want to live a long time, have great resistance to illnesses and that kind of thing, well, you can eat well and run and exercise till the cows come home, and you're not going to have good physical wellness if you don't have mental wellness, if you're stressed out and don't like yourself, that kind of thing. Well, you're not going to have mental wellness if you don't have some degree of social wellness, if you don't have some degree of support and love and the ability to communicate with others in your life. And you're not going to have that if you're homeless and your life is falling apart and you have lacks order and that kind of thing. And it's going to be hard to have that if you don't have moral wellness, which is the sense of following your values and what's important, so that people don't wind up hating you and you don't wind up hating yourself. So, and it's hard to have that. This has spiritual wellness. I've actually changed the name of that to existential wellness, mm-hmm. where it's a sense of just seeing beauty, practicing gratitude, or religion, devotion to something that kind of gets you in that sense of, kind of wakes you up to now. And so all these spheres of wellness independently, they cause your brain to shift on their own. So if you're physically healthy and well, you will feel more alive. And you will stop focusing on individual things and feel the sense of presence. So all of these around the circle do that. So they all interact with each other, and that's what I'm calling the Satori West method. So that's the fourth video. Fifth point of the Satori West method is that tunnel vision is fairly invisible. And that's the problem, is that it's just invisible. So you go through life because it's you're so used to it. It's so habitual that you can't see your own mind locked into the sense of self. You can't see it locked into wanting and grasping and idealizing and catastrophizing and all that kind of stuff. And so when you have negative feelings, they are very helpful. Because first of all, when you meditate, for instance, if you feel negative feelings, it's like, well, no, I shouldn't feel that. That should be X'd out of that experience. But when you can incorporate the negativity, you can see your tunnel vision easier. So the theme of the fifth video is that every crisis is an opportunity, which means that when you're in crisis, if you've had a health scare, or if you've lost someone really close to you, or if you're scared or worried or troubled about something, it puts you into tunnel vision. And even though you're preoccupied at that moment, you can see your tunnel vision really clearly. You can see how it warps your reality. When I'm stuck in a traffic accident, I mean, or a traffic jam, I can see that. And so part of, I think, meditation, brain shifting, is to see one's tunnel vision, to use the negative feelings that are dragging you into tunnel vision as an opportunity to wake out of it and come to that place that is miraculous, that you're missing out on, that this, how precious this second is, and how your mind is being dragged away from it. So that is the Torrey West Method. Something else I left out.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.